Hello and welcome to the Mystic Cast, where you join Jack Stafford and Deborah Littleboy, members of the Aetherius Society, the cosmic religion for the Aquarian Age, as we break down the barriers between religion, science, metaphysics, philosophy, and mysticism, all of which are really only aspects of the self-same quest for truth. Please note this is an independent program, not produced or fact-checked by the Aetherius Society. Today, our guests are Dan and Kat Eckhart. Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Very well. Thanks for having us.
Well.
It's our pleasure. I think we heard of you from the Coast to Coast radio show.
Oh, okay.
What were you on there discussing? Remind me of that.
Magic, witchcraft, mediumship, and whatever else they wanted to ask us about that night.
Coast to Coast is a fantastic program, but you kind of have to roll with it when you're on it. And sometimes the conversations go in interesting and unexpected places, which is honestly what we love and why we're excited to be here today.
Yes. Yeah, our president Richard Lawrence has been on there many times discussing UFOs. That's his particular specialty. But today I want to talk about your school of the occult arts, because you're very generous people in that many people keep their magic close to their chest. Sure. But you're willing to share it, so maybe you could tell us a little bit about your school.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it started April 1st in 2021, so we've been running now for over 2 years, and the desire to create the school really started from a place of finding this kind of transformation through the work that we do. As soon as you encounter esotericism, occultism, whatever you want to call it, the world is suddenly bigger and larger and has way more going on. And you begin to look for resources. I know we all have been there. That like first step into the esoteric or mystic journey is often an event that challenges us and opens that window of possibility, followed by a just rabbit hole spiral of books and reading and podcasts and lectures. And it's an insurmountable soup of material. And so myself and Kat and our partner, Isabel Rizzo, who teaches with us, who was from Chicago, she's an internationally exhibited artist and witch, we decided to put something together that would be a non-denominational school of esotericism and mysticism to point people in a direction towards their own transformative capacity. So what are resources that are quote unquote good? Like what are the resources that are valuable, that have a lineage, that have been here for some time, versus, you know, just TikTok stuff? There's certainly a lot of that. So that was the main impetus behind creating the school.
Yeah. I think it in many ways came from our friendship and our conversations about our own personal journeys into magic and occultism. Because when you kind of step your toe into this, or you feel called to explore magic or the world of the occult, it can be very isolating. You can feel very alone and strange, and it is countercultural in that way. And so we started having these conversations with our friend weekly, and out of this, we had these ideas about what we wanted to explore and research together. And eventually we did want to share that with people. And that's really where the school came from.
Yeah.
It seems to me like a stepping stone into the world of metaphysics and the occult. I mean, you make it fun with a lot of Harry Potter references and,
sure.
You know, it's a paddling pool to get people in. And exactly. Then once they're in, they realize the seriousness of the subject.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And I think that was one of the major questions that we had going into building the school and going into building this repository of lectures and resources and PDFs and all of that, was how do we facilitate the great work? And when I say that, I mean from an occult or magical or esoteric perspective. And when I say I know the Aetherian Society, everyone there is familiar with what occult means, but for the listener who just kind of said, oh, I want to check out this Mysticast, the occult is a word that simply means the hidden things. It's not necessary. Well, it's definitely not a cult, C-U-L-T, which is like people drinking Kool-Aid somewhere and like that's a bad time. The occult is just the hidden, and lots of things are hidden. Lots of things fall under that hidden umbrella. So the challenge for us was, how do we introduce people to this world without falling prey to the historical issues that have plagued occult orders, which has been like, if you look at the Golden Dawn or the OTO or these, or even Dion Fortune, Society of Inner Light, a lot of them broke free of this idea of dogma only to kind of turn around and fall right back into dogma. And so our concept was, how do we have an instructional space where people can still have the freedom to explore those various divergent pathways? As you said in the introduction, whether it's science or mysticism or UFOs or cryptozoology or any of those things, they are all kind of an aspect or an emanation of the unknown, of the universal mind, I guess we could call it.
And so who are some of your occult idols then? Who do you look up to in the occult world through now and through history?
Well, if you're looking from today to all the way back to who knows when, there's almost too many to name. But yeah, we do admire Dion Fortune. Who else do we admire?
I think a modern day practitioner who's been invaluable as both a resource and someone who's been a guide to our journey, even just through the written word, John Michael Greer, the Druid and occult author. He's a phenomenal resource. And historically, I have a desire to, I love the romanticism. I love the aesthetics. And that's part of this journey. I think sometimes, or at least it can be, sometimes people look at the greater esoteric world and they say like, oh, well, I don't want to be too Harry Potter. I don't want to be too fictitious. I don't want to give people the wrong idea. And I empathize with that point. And I see the value of it. But conversely, it's also the window by which everyone kind of comes, or not everyone comes into it, but many people come into it through that perspective of, wouldn't it be cool if there was a magical Hogwarts somewhere? So the romantic in me looks at people like Jack Parsons or Israel Regardie, or these like kind of scholarly but wild and out there individuals who were trying things, and they didn't always work. Sometimes the occult work takes you in strange and interesting places, and sometimes dangerous places. But I admire that ferocity and that tenacity to say, "No, I'm going to try this, even if I don't know how it ends."
Yeah. Also, Master Jesus. People don't realize that he was a master of the occult, of yoga, and you know, things like walking on water and rising from the dead. These have been done many times through history, and you know, access through yoga, which is a big part of the occult. People just think of yoga now as asanas, which is a big mistake. I mean, there's a lot of yogic practices in our society. We use a lot of yogic practices to prepare the body and you know, open the panels. What kind of practices do you guys do? To daily practices.
We do many practices. I think we do energy medicine for our own health and for others in our community. We do that daily, energy medicine exercises. We do our own version of our different versions of ceremonial magic, of summoning good things into our lives and banishing things that are not, I guess, what can you say is good, but is not in accordance with what the universe wants for our lives. And we have a daily practice of offering to our ancestors and to our spirit guides and our exalted ancestors. And we obviously have a deep connection with nature as well, even though we don't really see it as truly separate from ourselves. We see it as our environment, where we are, and very much internal as well. So we honor the movement of the planets, and we do our own little ceremonies. We do so many different things, really.
I mean,
it's full time. You can have the luxury of
It's the luxury of doing this for a living, partially. In the morning, the morning routine is as simple as waking up, and I take more of a ceremonial tack in my magical and meditative work. So my day begins with the first thing being the adoration of the sun, depending on the position that it's in, followed by a banishing ritual of the pentagram, or a lesser ritual of the pentagram, which is simply, as Kat said, banishing. And while it's not Like, it can be used to banish an entity or a spirit, but the primary piece of that work is literally pushing back against the elemental influences in our lives and almost opening a little window for the, you could call it the true self, or for divine communication, or for, we talked about Master Jesus, the kind of Christ center, the Christ archetype to come through. That's all part of that pentagram. And then, of course, middle pillar work. And the middle pillar is just an energetic balancing of, well, and you can quickly go very deep into the weeds, but you see how blended these things are. And as Kat mentioned, the planetary energies, I do a hygromantia planetary prayer every morning, an invocation. And then there's honestly the part of the great work that some people are very bored by, which is the meditative part. And to me, that is actually the meat of the work. It's fun to like hold your athame or your wand and draw geometric shapes in the air. That's exciting. But that's really just preparatory to then being in a unified state or a stasis with the divine, as clearly as we can do that, because that is a process.
Oh, I saw Deborah's antenna going up there. I think you piqued her interest a lot there.
That's good. I'm nodding inside and I'm trying to keep the head straight, because everything you're saying, it's like, oh yeah, and what about I do that too, and isn't that like what I so yeah, it would quickly become the Deborah show if I then started telling you all the parallels that I'm hearing from you. But actually what's happened is that they made my heart skip. Yeah. Because that's really, we need to know what this body is, this robot body. People need to understand that it's so sophisticated and so bent out of shape by wrong thought, wrong action, wrong food, wrong. And we can bring it back. And that's the beauty of it, because it's all done through mind, through the discipline of mind and having fun and lifting the vibrations, because we're here to lift the vibrations. So I've got to, sorry, Jack, but I've just got to tell you I won't go into all my morning routine, but I've got my set got to do this. My set got to do this is that I like to get up just as the sun's rising. Now in the UK, we don't always see the sun rising. Because we get a lot of cloud or what have you, but I know the general direction. So I'm going with the holy flow. So I face that outside, no shoes on the grass, I'm in a beautiful part of the world, countryside, and I give praise to the new dawn. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a prayer, there's two prayers, set prayers, and they're said like this, because we pray, because we use the chakras in the mm-hmm. palms of our hands and our chest. So I send that energy out and I get it back. And I'm telling you, I do get it back. Mm-hmm. I can feel it. It's not just, oh, wouldn't it be nice? No, yeah. It's real. The more you practice it, you know, it's real. So that's my sort of first bit. Then I've got a set of six breathing exercises, which was given to us by Dr. King. Mm-hmm. He, a Western master of yoga, knew how the Western mind worked. And out of all the thousands and thousands of breathing exercises, he put together, compiled six, which you can do in 15 minutes. But the more you do them, again, the more it lines you up like super quick. Mm-hmm. So that's it. So I get some energy into my body. I'm recharging my body. And then I go into 20 minutes of sacred mantra. Mm. And again, because it's all vibrations, so just putting the cells back into place. So that's my, I'm going to shut up now, Jack. That's my morning routine. And I embrace anybody's routine because it is a discipline. It's all habit. We all have habits. And most of them actually are not good. Yeah. And the ones that are actually the worst, the more difficult they are to get rid of. Old habits die hard, and that is so true. But they can, you can make them go away. And I heard that with your pentagram banishing. I saw that as sort of the parallel. And it excites me that that different disciplines are all going back to the same source.
And that's and we're really
to embrace
the...
that.
Yeah, that's the heart of this. Is there's I was having a conversation with a friend who's a who's involved in like more of a practiced kind of modern paganism. And we were discussing like the differences between pantheons and deities and that sort of thing. And I was drawn back to that. I believe it's a Sufi affirmation, a Sufi prayer or a mantra, essentially, that there's no God but God. And I love that like central concept within all of these esoteric traditions, especially the ones that are aware of the energetic body and aware of the way in which yes, breathing techniques, visualization techniques, energetic movement techniques can help bring that body into alignment, bring that into restoration. There's a kernel there that everyone seems to be grasping onto. There's a piece hermetic. There that, yeah, it's a hermetic piece in a way.
Everything is vibration.
Exactly.
But I mean, there's so much more, and that's the beauty of it. Like there is this kind of unifying thing. Of many magical and not necessarily magical traditions. But there's also so many different ways that you can personally practice it and integrate it into your life. That's what's so wonderful about magic. It's freeing, but there's so many different ways that you can make it work for you. Mm-hmm. It can be something super simple like blessing your food before you eat it. And you know, breathing is simple.
Yeah.
It's simple, but if you pay attention to it, if you make it into something that that heals you, that heals your environment around you, it's so powerful.
It is.
That's beautifully said. Yeah, I think that's Deborah Sitpak picked up something on in your work there about the connection to the Mother Earth. And we bless the Mother Earth every day in our prayers as well. And particularly, you know, as witches are connected like that. I actually saw a great post on your feed the other day, Deborah. We were taught to fear witches, not the people that burned them.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, something very wrong there.
There's
any sane thinking person, how could that ever be? You know, and so but fear is the biggie, isn't it? Fear is insidious, it creeps in, you don't even comes by different names, but it stops and it limits us. Mm-hmm. And the more that we do this self-limitation, the more we're actually sacrificing the divinity within ourselves and the chance to actually integrate everybody and the planet to raise the vibrations and let's all get on. Let's not have anybody that hasn't got any clothes. Let's not have anybody that's hungry tonight. Let's not, you know, let's teach ourselves to be well because we can. And the more we embrace everybody that comes to us and look for those similarities, look for that oneness, embrace it, bring that in, and then publish it out to as many people as we can get it to. We've got to be doing a service to the earth and to each other and become who we're meant to be, because we're not who we're meant to be at the moment. We're dysfunctional, like naughty kids that can't clean their room up. It's just, yeah, anyway.
No, that's one of the most frustrating things to kind of come into my awareness since starting this journey is, you know, grow up, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but for your listeners, we're broadcasting from America. We're broadcasting from the East Coast. We're in Maryland, about an hour north of DC. And growing up in that kind of fast-paced East Coast American, like we're going to make all our money and we're just going to be doing what we do. And it's all about getting ahead and striving. There was a profound moment for me in the course of my praxis where I realized, oh, and it's not a big realization. It's one I think most people come to, but it was shocking for me, this, oh, wait a second. There's totally enough. Like, there is enough out there. We don't need to be involved in this rat race and this concept of I need to go and I need to get so this person doesn't have it, so I have it. Like, that idea of limitation and that idea of constriction just feels, it feels so limiting. And I don't know how I ever believed it, but I know that it was ingrained within me and it's ingrained within others.
I know how you believe it, mm-hmm. because we're kind of taught an idea of scarcity, mm-hmm. so that we can, you know, strive and work. And that's, we're speaking to our culture here, to our environment very, very much so. But I do think scarcity is something that is taught, and I think it is related to the concept of fear, the mm-hmm. fear of not enough, the fear that drives us to do things that are not united with our higher selves, with our best selves.
And Deborah, as you pointed out, doing the energetic work, moving the energy, you said, I get it back. It's a limitless source. When you tap into that energetic system and move it through the body and feel that, I used to be one of these people who was like, that's all bunk. Like, I can get behind the philosophy of esotericism, but that energy movement stuff, get that out of here. Until I started doing it. And then you realize, oh my goodness, this is an inexhaustible source that just wants to give. When you're in that meditative state of, and I mean, it's a hard thing to achieve. And there's the amount of times that I can count that breakthrough happening is on less than one hand. But still, that moment of just profound, not only is this limitless, it also wants to give. You're not taking it reluctantly. It's saying, no, here, take this. This is for you. This is part of you. That's changed my whole life.
Yeah. When I first found this society, I was doing energy healing with a spiritualist church. And I had been initiated into Reiki by a pagan witch, and people said they got good results. But actually, didn't feel anything. I just thought that I sort of went where I wanted to, didn't do any of their sort of Reiki bits. No discipline to it at all. If somebody said they had a bad elbow, and I'd be touching their neck because that's where it seemed to be. I needed to anyway. So it was very much the Deborah show, and so I came into the society which is very much order, discipline, you know, do it right, then do it better than right, and then how can you improve it and do it a little bit more than that. So we do a 12 blessing service, which is a prayer service every day, and we join in, we do it online now, and I would sit in my chair, this chair I'm now, and I do the 12 blessings listening and just trust that the energy was guided. Didn't feel a thing. Never felt a thing, but thought, well, I trust these people. They say it's working, so it's working. 3 years every day doing my 12 blessing service, nothing. Then one day, on a Sunday, one of our priests from in LA, name of Paul Nugent, did the 12 blessing service. And I went, I thought I'd come off my chair. Literally, I thought I'd come off my chair. I didn't know what to do with this energy. Had I been electrocuted? What was going on here? Mm-hmm. And it was fabulous. It was just, and I'm feeling the tingle now because you'd never forget that, which mm-hmm. is why you're, you know, never forget that. So I'd written to Paul Nugent and said, this is so fabulous. Told the story. So, so fabulous. Thank you so much. Next day. Next time Paul Nugent was on, I saw that preparing then. It was mm-hmm. then preparing because she knew what was going to happen because it happened before. Nothing. Because, and I worked it out, it was because my expectation and focus had changed from giving to what's Deborah going to get.
Mm. Yeah.
And that was my turning point, that when I didn't get what I sat, because I went there with a greedy mind. Mm. I'll have some more of that. I can get that from Paul because I got it the last time. That's the honest, God's honest truth. And when that didn't happen and I worked it out what was happening, that didn't come immediately afterwards. It came all like the disappointment and the sulky kid type of thing. But when I'd actually worked it out, I can say that progressively since that point, and that may be 6-7 years ago now, I don't know, I don't actually know, but a good few years ago, I now know, not only know, I feel it. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like I had to get rid of that blockage in my mind about give me, give me, give me, scarcity, mm-hmm. to let me give, let me give, let me give.
Yeah, that's, we talk about this. I don't know if you or your listeners are familiar, probably, with Neville Goddard, the American mystic. He was popular in the 60s and 70s. He was instructed in, he started out as a trained dancer and he was instructed in Kabbalah and then eventually went on his own mystical journey. I think if you're not familiar with him, you might really enjoy some of his work, especially some of his writings on his mystic encounters with what he calls the child, or the child, and it's like a vision he had of like the Christ child that was, he realized was trapped within inside himself, and that's then became his journey.
What is regardless, Neville
Goddard, G-O-D-D-A-R-D. His work is fantastic. It's some exciting stuff to read. That being said, he got very popular in the United States because he started to share this message about essentially the of reality creation or mind causation, very much New Thought aligned of, if I think about things and exist within the state of having said things, then they do tend to appear in one's life. And I think that's like a entry point for a lot of people into especially witchcraft or the occult, is like this idea of, what can I get? Well, I need this, and what can I get?
Yeah.
And what I love about Neville is his point of discussing manifestation was this idea of manifestation is a bridge. And if you're having trouble like manifesting things, take some time and think purely about giving and manifesting for others. Instead of visualizing yourself in the house with the job or whatever, spend some time visualizing that for the people who need it, for your friend who's out of work, or visualize healing for the individual in your life who's ill. And generally speaking, what he would find is not only would people suddenly have this breakthrough and then be able to do things for themselves as well, it also kickstarted the theurgic journey. It moved the mind's awareness from this, what we call thaumaturgy of, I'm doing ritual action to create material change for me, to this theurgic praxis of, I'm doing ritual action to purify myself and to move into oneness with whatever this giving source is. And to me, that's the mark of someone who's really a true adept or doing the work is, yes, the material world is something they're very aware of and something that they're moving through, but their especially magical praxis is pointing them into a self-development journey.
Oh, that's great. I see so much alignment. This is what this show is about, is connecting all the truths between us. And yeah, I'm really getting so much. Our motto is jewel in the rock. Jewel is in the rock. Service is the jewel in the rock of attainment. So it's all about service. And that's what the cosmic, because Dr. King, he channeled like cosmic masters. That's what he go over 600 transmissions. And the one that sticks in my mind with you guys is the free will versus freedom, because Kat was talking about, you know, your higher self, and, you know, Dan, you were talking about not being limited by your lower self, you know, your greed, basically, you know, because people think they want freedom to do whatever they want, you know, want a bigger house, bigger car, all these holidays, but what you do, Dan, you know, you give up your freedom. You sit in meditation. You maintain immobility, and that's what Dr. King did. You know, sat in, you know, Padmasana, you know, for up to, you know, 8 hours, staring at a keyhole, whatever. And he did that for 10 years, and he raised Kundalini all the way up to the crown chakra. He could leave the body at will. So you, by giving up freedom, you can leave the body, which is greater freedom. So you can go to the other realms. You can go to Venus. You can go to Mars. That's freedom. That's real free will, that freedom. And you have to give up this petty free will, which we, some time ago in our history, we as a race chose and we gave up. So rather than freedom within the law of karma, that makes sense. You can always karmic action. So yeah, I can send you that transmission if you like.
I think there's some profound truth in that, because I'm immediately just drawn to this, again, that idea from Master Jesus, this idea of like, whoever wants to gain their life must lose it. And we hear that, and we don't, like, especially as, you know, within the American Christian world, is just like, ooh, I don't know if I like that. But what you're talking about with the surrender of the freedom is this, it sounds incompatible with what we've been brought to believe, which is that, no, freedom is, you know, the ability to make any decision I want to make. Peter Carroll, who's a chaos magician and author, talks about this as true freedom is optionality. It's not the limitation of, no, my free path is this one thing I choose. We have to give up that illusion of the one thing, and then, oh, suddenly there are many. And now there's real, like, a freedom of choice here. That choice, I found, or at least for me, I feel like within esoteric, or at least the esoteric tradition that I feel resonates with me, what you're describing is aligned with this idea of, like, the true will. Like, what is the will that we have, the will that we were kind of, if you want to call it, sent here or chose to be here for this purpose? That will is obscured from us by conditioning, by the circumstances of the reality we're living in. And it's that paradox, right? Of, I'm giving up all these other wills, all these other choices for that one true thing. And I think that's the work that we're all on here.
We just found our new best friends, Deborah.
Yay.
We always love new friends.
Yeah. That's great. No, it really resonates. Yeah.
Can I jump in and ask you about the school, which now is 2 years old? Mm-hmm. We've got a Facebook group called Awakening Through King Yoga, which is our school, if you want.
Sure.
It's where we invite people to come in and practice with us and share and bring in up their thoughts and fears and questions in a nice, safe place. So not a school in a, like, you're going to turn up at 9 o'clock. Well, you could turn up at 9 o'clock in the morning and do mantra practice, yes, you can, but it's a more like you dip in and out, and we're a solid base for people to come to. But we're looking to grow that now. Mm-hmm. So this is why. So if you like, I'm picking your brains to make our product as best to be the most effective that it can be. So to start with, we had we have a one-tier system where people need to buy our workbook, which is this. Mm-hmm. So it's a book with 7 initiations, including initiation into sacred mantra. And because of the law of karma, you have to be initiated by a master. So people have to buy the book. It's £10. So probably the cheapest occult school ever in the history of the world. But anyway, but it's still a barrier for people you're meant to be spiritual, you know, and all this negative stuff. So we're now on the brink of 2-tier, where we're going to take the 7 initiations to a higher level, and that anybody that's even remotely interested, they may be not even paddling, but just looking to see what the pool looks like, to come in and ask questions. This is a long explanation. Give me just another minute. So what I think in my mind's eye, we're on the brink of having that approved by our board of directors. What I then see is in that first tier, that anybody come on, everybody, that we have people like yourselves coming in on a Saturday afternoon, where I would run a question and answer, and my guests this week would be my dear friends, the Eckharts, and they are interested in blah, if you want to come and ask your questions. So the first thing is, how does it work for you? But how does that concept I've described to you sound as a way forward? And I want you to be really honest with me, because obviously there's no point if we all just play nice with each other. We need to be straight down the line here.
Sure.
Well, there is a slight difference, I guess, between niceness and kindness. And kindness is a little bit deeper. And I think you're asking for some deep reflection. So you would be introducing the question and answer option?
I see it in my mind's eye that I'd have a session. I'm saying a Saturday afternoon because that's probably best for all time zones, where I would run a question and answer for the whole of our group, but that would be going on. But then on a rolling basis, I would be asking or inviting people like yourselves to come in in that question and answer, and do a little whatever you decide to. But you're there. What I'm trying to do is show the community that actually, it doesn't matter whether you're called Bill, Bob, or Jenny Smith. We're all part of the same thing, going back to the same thing. And what we have to have is compassion in our heart and to be accepting of different ways of saying things, different ways of expressing ourselves, different ways. So trying to bring everything, as opposed to looking for the differences, looking for the similarities.
Yeah.
So that would be, so as I say, that, for that tier one of everybody that's like, well, I'm not sure whether that's right for me. I'm not quite sure whether I quite like what.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I really do. I think that's a great way to engage with and answer people's questions. It's certainly something that when we started doing our work, that was like, we called them open houses, and we would do like larger Q&A around the work that we do, as well as the different like traditions, and try and spotlight individuals who had experience within, for example, neither of us are Wiccan, but you know, Wicca is a very popular form of magical praxis within the United States. And a lot of individuals who like are thinking, maybe I should explore witchcraft, the first thing that comes to mind is, I guess that's Wicca. So having someone on who can talk about, oh yes, this is the practice that aligns for me. And then we dig into that idea of like, well, why does that practice align for you? And we almost take a kind of, I guess you could call it a Jungian approach, but we're looking at the symbols. Like, what are the symbols that resonate with us? What is the symbology that is most understood by our psyche in the space where it is now? That's why I really liked what you were saying about Dr. King and his ideas around a kind of Western a Western yoga that can be accessible to the Western mind. Deeply ingrained cultural symbols didn't quite make the jump in translation to people who lived in London or New York City or LA. You know, those are concepts that are a little too outside of our sphere. So that Q&A space, I think, is a beautiful idea to allow individuals to come in and say, no, this is the same part of whatever this truth is. We just have different terminology for it and different symbols that really activate us. One of the greatest hurdles with the School of Occult Arts has honestly been introducing the long history of medieval, like Christian esotericism, to individuals who are fleeing modern Christianity as something that's not working for them and something that in the United States might be a space of abuse or trauma or just overall spiritual restriction, and feeling again that kind of pressure of dogma. A lot of people have a knee-jerk reaction to that and say, well, no, I don't want to hear about any of that. I'm past that. Someone literally told me that they had ascended beyond religion. And I was like, that's an interesting idea, but let's talk about what you ascended away from. What about all of those symbols and deep core things that other people have maybe ended up in spaces or reached conclusions that you might personally disagree with? But what about all the other stuff in there that still is instructive and that we can use as building blocks in constructing the cosmovision that makes sense for us and that activates and ignites us?
To speak a little more to the Q&A, the conversations with people kind of globally, I think that in itself is a symbol of something that we should be doing. It is difficult to have a good conversation. Anyone who has been to a town hall meeting in your small town or has been online in different communities or on different forums knows that it is very difficult to have a good conversation. And I think that instituting places, times, and rituals of doing so is a healing act for the world. The thing as teachers, as leaders, that we have to be mindful of and always trying to do our best is setting those intentions and setting those expectations for those in attendance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the real work as facilitators and moderators of these types of conversations, because these topics we're discussing are deeply personal and they're deeply important. And sometimes you do butt up against people's fear, mm-hmm. and people's worry of, if I allow myself to entertain this idea, where does this leave me? Where does this leave my identity? Where does this leave my place in my community? And I think as someone who respects that and understands those feelings will come up, you can be a real teacher and leader in allowing people to explore these topics safely and have these good transformative conversations.
Absolutely. So many people painted themselves into a corner of a room and don't even realize they've done it. And then when they realize they've done it, there's a fear of being like, oh, I've been stupid, or I'm quite safe in this corner of my room. Thank you very much, but don't be bothering me now, because look at me in my corner of my room. And it's very, very difficult. And fear is a sneaky thing.
It is.
It comes here in many forms, shapes, and colors. I find fear and I see it like something that I'm just like pulling out. Well, where did you come from? Mm-hmm. You know, what did you call yourself for all these years? It's a constant weeding system. Mm-hmm. And it's like you think you've got it all clear and you're like really pleased with yourself, and then suddenly you turn around and everything's been growing behind you. Mm-hmm. So it's a, so we have to be really compassionate and really open with each other and really honest, my fear comes sometimes in the case of like, can't be bothered, and that's on board. Mm-hmm. And that's fear.
Yeah. Sure.
I recognize that. It's not nice. And I see, if I put a mirror on, you probably saw that face. That face comes. That ugly mouth comes. So you get to see your own signs. But it's, for me, it's a case of, I've got to show that ugliness, mm-hmm. almost to allow other people to show that ugliness. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it just stays hidden.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, please. Go.
I was just going to say, as Kat mentioned, this idea of like Q&A as a healing action, as like a community and dialogue, and that we don't often know how to have discussion. Part of that is because we don't know how to have discussion with ourselves. Many of us are totally unmoored from, my neck really hurts and this thing is going on in my life, and we'll never make those connections. And we ridicule people who do. Like, there are various psychological authors and researchers who have said, wait a second, there's a mind-body connection here, maybe between various illnesses and various traumas or repressions or what have you. And their work was either suppressed or they were derided publicly. And there's a slight turn happening within materialism towards, wait a second, maybe there is more happening in the body than just, a machine that needs to go in periodically to get a tune-up. Like, there's something else to it. But we don't know how to have conversation with ourselves. So primarily that is, the work of the mantras, the prayers, the meditation, the ritual. That helps with the work within the self. But then you realize, wait a second, myself just isn't me. Myself is all of us. We're all myself. And so when that happens, then we have to have community conversation, or else we're still turning away from the self. And that's the mind-bending paradox for me, of trying to build community as an action to heal community, but by consequence, an action of healing the integration between the mind and the body. And the fear is real.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we've got a few minutes left. Is there...
I segued you there, Jack, because I felt you were going to jump in with the first freedom, but I obviously don't know you as well as I thought I did.
Well, maybe our regular listeners know about that, but we've just got a few minutes left. And is there something you'd like to leave us with about your courses or your online consultations or something the audience can keep in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely.
A big driver for us has been embracing curiosity and embracing our own kind of internal knowledge and following our own path. And that's allowed us to explore a variety of different things and confront our fear and our ugliness and grow beyond ourselves. So we invite anyone who is curious to take a look, explore, maybe spend £10 and buy an occult work. Trust yourself.
Yeah.
If you have this intuitive calling towards a specific path or teacher or idea even, try exploring it. It's worth it. It's worth it to yourself.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that's really been resonating with me in this conversation has been the fear discussion, because right now in the School of Occult Arts, we're doing a long module that's very hands-on called Liber Curatoria, which is a blending of the pursuit of stasis with the Holy Guardian Angel, which in occult work is this, essentially it's the part of our soul that we've been cut off from. And it's the finding, there's an enlightenment there, there's a free will, a true will there, it's a complex and layered conversation. But within the pursuit of finding the Holy Guardian Angel, there are a lot of there's a lot of self-work and ritual purification. There's a lot of petitioning deities and petitioning the again, that kind of cosmic all-mind consciousness to remove from us the actual line is, take from me what is waste, take from me what is filth. Like these concepts of, and we hear those words like waste and filth, and we think of the obvious things like, oh yeah, you know, sometimes I lie, or oh yeah, you know, I'm very vain. But often those things are the illusory goals that we've created for ourselves. And we're afraid to give up those illusory goals because we think like, I can't give up this thing I'm working towards. My whole life has been oriented towards this. I can't give it up. But if it never comes to fruition, if it's truly an illusion, why aren't we getting rid of it? You know, why aren't we moving past it? Why aren't we releasing it? So that work has been profoundly healing, but it's also been bringing up a lot of those, my fears are the fears of leaving the illusions that I've built, not a fear of what's coming. It's just the idea of what's coming is different than maybe I've been conditioned to imagine. So throughout Liber Curatoria, we've been doing, of course, that ritual work, but then also marrying it again to Jung's exploration of the subconscious, his creation of the Red Book, and following surrealists.
Artists.
And artists like Austin Osman Spare, who was a chaos magician, essentially. He was the creator of sigils, or that's debatable, but he popularized them, I should say. He had this idea of, well, if we're talking about symbology and internal symbology, divination through a tarot deck is not going to be as useful because that's someone else's symbol. So you should be building your own based off of the symbols that come to you in dreams, in meditation, in your religious spiritual life. Like what symbols have unique meaning to you? So that synthesis that we've been working at in School of Occult Arts at that higher level of, you know, a very long, two-quarter long, you know, course is also then something that isn't ready for, or something that if most people aren't ready for it, or if people are just kind of dipping their toe in, there are course loads of material beneath that are just, that kind of like, here's a taste, here's some groundwork, here's an exploration into, for again, you brought up Master Jesus earlier. well, let's talk about the weird stuff. Let's talk about the, you know, the flight into Egypt. And what things did, you know, Master Jesus bring back from Egypt into, you know, the stories that we read about in the Bible? Like, there's philosophy there that we can draw connection points to. And you can tell I'm getting carried away. I'm getting in the weeds. But this is the kind of thing that lights me up.
I know. Well, I think we all want this conversation to keep going. I'm sure the listener does as well, but I'm afraid we run out of time. Mm-hmm. So you'll just have to come back on.
And okay. We'd love to. This has been a blast.
Yeah, it's been great. And you've got such in-depth knowledge about so many subjects. And if you do dig into the Nine Freedoms by Dr. Mm-hmm. King, I'm sure you'd find it really rewarding reading because, Deborah mentioned the first freedom, bravery, but it goes on to, you know, enlightenment, cosmic consciousness, ascension, interplanetary existence. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of occult, you know, it really ties the strands of occult because it's the latest teachings we've been able to receive on this earth. So I'm sure you'd really, someone of your,
I'm sure.
What's the right way to put it? Someone of your,
proclivity.
Education. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would get a lot from it. Yeah.
Yeah. And what, so excited. Excited to explore it.
Okay, great. So where can people follow more about you, hear more about you, your website? And
right. So we have a website, theeckharts.com, and we have events there occasionally. The School of Occult Arts has a page on that website as well, so you can learn more about that. As you mentioned, Jack, we do have some services, some consultations. If people are looking to have a conversation with us about something going on in their life, we're here for that. If they're looking for connecting with spirits, a la mediumship. I know, Deborah, you were talking about the Spiritualist Church. We do mediumship readings as well through our website. But then you can also read a little bit more about, you know, the conversation we're having today, our long form thoughts on our Substack, which is called Fromage Mystique. Fromage Mystique, real briefly, was a term that was used to describe all the weird mystery cheese of occult work that people didn't know what to do with during the Renaissance period. So we kind of took that on for ourselves as, yes, the mystery cheese, what's in this? Fromage Mystique is where we're most active. We have a massive project underway that we can't talk about too much, but it's a big media thing. Once that comes to fruition in 2024, you'll probably be able to find us on the major social media sites, but Kat and I probably won't be running them. It'll be someone else. We can't do social media. It makes us, it's so bad for me.
Gosh, well, you guys are going places. I can really tell. So if people want to also learn more about the Aetherius Society, they can go to aetherius.org. And yeah, we'll get you back on soon.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. You two are my new favorite people.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Yes. Bye.
Bye-bye.